From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We have a great show for you this week. We've got comedian and actor Bob Odenkirk. He just ended his role as lawyer Saul Goodman on Breaking Bad. He's coming by to play. But first, this week, the Nobel Prize Committee wanted to tell writer Alice Munro that she had won the prize in literature, and they couldn't reach her. This is true. They got her voicemail repeatedly. Now, we haven't been able to confirm this, but we have reason to believe that when the Nobel Prize Committee called her, this is what they heard.
Hello. Carl Castle here. Alice Munro can't come to the phone right now. If this is the Nobel Prize Committee, just leave my 800,000 kroner after the beep.
She won the listener limerick challenge, naturally. You've only got a year till next year's awards to get your voicemail message, so give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Let's welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Rio in Los Angeles.
This is Rio?
Yeah.
Rio, do you dance upon the sand?
All the time.
I'm sorry for doing that. Everybody probably does.
That's all right. I actually got named after Duran Duran.
Did you really?
I did. The story that I'm told is that my mom was pretty clear and said, boy or girl, this kid's going to be named Rio.
It could have been worse. Your name could have been Hungry Like the Wolf.
Well, welcome to our show, Rio. Let me introduce you to our panel. First up, it's a comedian you can see October 16th in Los Angeles at the Meltdown Show. It's Brian Babylon.
Hey, Rio.
Next, a comedian and head writer for the Comedy Central show Inside Amy Schumer, it's Jesse Klein.
Hi, Rio.
And the new host of the public radio variety show Livewire, it's Luke Burbank is here.
Hey, Rio.
Rio, welcome to the show. I have got the song in my head now. It is terrible.
It's all right.
No, it is not all right, sir. You're going to play Who's Carl this time, Rio. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly, of course, explain it 2 times out of 3. Do that, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
I am ready.
Here's your first quote.
They said they would be happy to do it in 6 weeks. 6 weeks? That will wreck our Thanksgiving.
That's Heidi Moore writing in the Guardian newspaper about an impending deadline in the U.S. government, the deadline to raise the what?
The debt ceiling.
Yes, indeed. Very good. Still worried about the fact that our government is shut down? Get over it. That's last week's crisis. Next Thursday, unless Congress raises the debt ceiling, the greatest nation in the world instantly becomes a deadbeat. Our creditors will have to start calling around trying to find us. Instead of America's parents, the collection agency will call up the Queen of England and ask her if she has a recent address for America.
You know, I'm a veteran of the default game, Peter, as a person who once signed up for 11 CDs for one penny.
Yeah.
It's actually not that bad to have terrible credit.
But then you have to do the thing where you, like, pretend that you don't know what's going on with your finances. Like when you're buying something at a store and they're like, your card was declined. You're like, I just used it. Run it again. What a mistake. No, it's cool. I just used it. Like, you know, where is that?
Years ago, I had a friend, and I called him looking for him, and somebody answered the phone, and I said, hello, is John there? And he said, no, he's not here. And I said, could you tell him Peter Sagal called? And he said, oh, it's me. And I said, why did you do that? He said, oh, I owe some people money. So maybe America can do that. Maybe America will be like, well, you know, hey, we'd like interest on our debt that we bought your treasury bonds. And like, no, we're Canada.
Yeah, you know what?
every time the caller ID comes up China, everyone just hides.
You know, I saw the saddest picture on the good old-fashioned internet.
And I saw this one.
It's a picture of this little kid, like, in a little lion suit, and he's at the National Zoo, and it said closed. If they just pumped that, that's how you get the government open. First of all, those parents are jerks for dressing their kid up knowing that zoo was closed.
But now that kid, like, is the zoo.
Yeah.
Like people are gonna
all
like
these,
pay
all these
to
confused
see
Japanese tourists that's, ran over. Is that an animal?
That's
they ran
the
over.
Closest thing we have to a lion right
all
now.
Right. Very good. Rio, you still there?
Still here.
All right. Here is your next quote.
Big shout out to Janet Yellen. You go, girl.
That was somebody tweeting her support of Janet Yellen, who may become the first ever woman to be chair of what?
The Federal Reserve.
That's exactly right, the Federal Reserve. Ms. Yellen, if confirmed, would become the first woman ever to head up the Federal Reserve.
Let me ask you a question. So now, can we say, I'm just going to put this out there. This is a question.
Yeah.
Is the glass ceiling over?
No.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, no.
But the thing is with that job is it depends on, they could be having like, you know, just a bad day and they go have a press conference and then stocks could dip. You know, their eyes are puffy. That means something.
They were crying from the end of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And then they did a press conference.
And then that didn't look right to some guy in Japan, so he sold all his stock off.
Remember people, Alan Greenspan would do these speeches and everybody would be parsing what he said. He predicts the economy will do quite well. He didn't say well. Mm-hmm. He did quite well.
Every word.
And that means like buy aluminum. And nobody understands why. Now, people have been wondering, of course, you know, about Hillary Clinton. Is she going to run for president? Well, seeing this other woman, right, mm-hmm. being elevated to this high position of power and influence, this, you know, is going to make Hillary angry. She's going to get inspired. She's somewhere right now. She's training. She's running the streets in her sweats, shadow boxing. She's punching hanging slabs of Bill Clinton. It's like, oh, honey, ouch, you know.
And she's doing it all in those very... powerful pantsuits.
Yeah, very sensible. Very sensible sweatpants. All right, Rio, here is your last quote.
If we're so dumb, why are we so rich?
That was an educator named Anthony P. Carnevale summing up reactions to a big new study came out this week, and it proves that whom are rather stupid?
Americans?
Yes, Americans, all of us. This study, the most expansive ever done, tested thousands of people all over the world and proves Americans are pretty bad at everything. We're at the bottom or near bottom of the scale in basic math skills, literacy, working with technology, and running a federal government. And this is the scary thing. This tests that they use all around the world are so incredibly easy. We still couldn't do it. This is true. One of the math questions, you look at a thermometer. Needle's pointing at 80 degrees. It says, how much would it be if it was 30 degrees less?
Cold.
Right? And that's why we're at the bottom of the scale.
It's freezing. That's the answer.
Yeah, but I bet, like, if it was like the test where you just have to, like, draw that turtle and send it in, like, we'd be great. But I will say I was on the subway a little while ago and it was crowded and I was standing and someone sitting had one of those little like handheld like a Wheel of Fortune type game where they're solving a puzzle and I saw that they had gotten it to it was a blank letter and then it was Atcher in the Rye and they just needed to fill in that last letter and I'm standing there and I'm like, oh man, just put C. And it was the answer they gave was Hatcher in the Rye.
There you go.
You saw this. You saw
that's
this.
That's Terry Hatcher's biography.
Carl, how did Rio do in our quiz?
Rio, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the voicemail on your voicemail or answering machine.
Thank you so much for playing, Rio.
Thank you.
We want to remind everyone to join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium and at our upcoming show in Cincinnati, Ohio, October 24th. Just a few tickets left. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Brian, the government shutdown has ceased all kinds of important government functions. But you'll be happy to know that one important government facility is still open. What is it?
I don't know. Give me a hint.
They can take our freedom, but they'll never take our Stairmaster.
Oh, the workout facility.
Right, the house gym is still open. So if you're keeping score at home, the United States nuclear plants are going uninspected, but the house gym still open.
Do you think Ted Cruz was born with that body?
Yeah, that's probably right.
I mean,
well, you know, who's the Paul Ryan there? Mm-hmm. If I could have a Paul Ryan body, you would not be able to tell me anything. My face on Paul Ryan's body
would look really weird.
So upsetting.
Yeah, like, yeah, we would.
So troubling.
I mean, and that would be really distressing.
That was the price I would have to pay for that nice physique, just to leave, like, blackhead, white body. Blackhead, awesome white body, that's the price you pay.
That
it's like
would,
a Brother Grimm's tale.
That something. Would literally get the government working again.
Yes.
Just to try to deal with the situation that was your head on Paul Ryan's body. They'd be like, sorry, I know, guys, we've had some...
Yeah. Raise the debt ceiling.
To whatever, to stop that.
You know what I think we should do?
What?
We shut down the showers for those jerks, and we have them stinky in that whatever chamber until they figure this out. Some nice old-fashioned body odor.
Yeah.
That'll get it going.
Well, you don't want to see... What if they start letting themselves going? They start growing, like, shutdown beards?
Mm-hmm.
And this goes on, right? At the State of the Union speech in January, people were like, behind the president, there's Joe Biden sitting next to a werewolf of some
kind.
Oh,
wait, no. That's the guy from Duck Dynasty.
Yeah.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Jesse Klein, Luke Burbank, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Diane in Puyallup, Washington.
From where?
Puyallup, Washington.
Puyallup?
Where the Puyallup Fair has been for years and years.
Exactly.
What is Puyallup like?
Oh, it's fabulous. I love living here. I'm down in the valley in the Lahar Zone, so we always have to be on alert for Mount Rainier sliding off.
I have no idea what you're talking about. The Lahar Zone?
Yes, I guess the north face of Mount Rainier right now, they tell us, is so brittle that it could just slide off at any moment, and the mud flows would come down the valley and cover my house in about an hour.
Really?
Yes.
So every day you get up and you look at the Mount Rainier, a beautiful mountain looming above you, and you say, don't kill me today.
That's right. I hope that the warning sirens go off if it really happens.
That would be good.
You sound really okay with this.
Yeah.
You sound very, very cool about the potential of a horrible, tragic death and a massive catastrophe.
Well, you know, they say that it happens every 500 to 1,000 years, and we're at 600 years now, so we have a little ways to go.
Hang on. Every 500 to 1,000 years, and it's 600 years. Well, we better hurry then. Let's get on with the game. It's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Diane's topic?
Reunited, and it don't feel so good.
Every family has a story to tell, and usually it's extremely boring to anyone not in that family. But this week we read about an unusual family reunion, and our panelists are going to tell you about it. Guess the true reunion story, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes.
First up, let's hear from Jesse Klein.
They say what happens in Saudi Arabia stays in Saudi Arabia. Well, actually, no one says that, but they especially don't say it now. Not after a freak incident that occurred this week in the city of Riyadh. A young race car driver was performing a high-speed stunt in a residential neighborhood when he lost control of his car and smashed through the wall of a house. This would be nothing more than a random accident, except for the fact that he had actually slammed into his father's house. And that would be nothing more than a coincidence, except for the fact that he didn't know it was his father's house, because unbeknownst to the driver or his mother, this is where his father was secretly living with his secret second family. You know, as you do. While the father went to the hospital to be treated for minor injuries, the son fled the scene on foot. Although there are no confirmed reports of his whereabouts, it can be assumed that he is at his therapist's office being treated for everything.
A race car driver in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, accidentally drives his car through a wall and meets his father's second family. Your next story of a reunion that's re-unusual comes from Brian Babylon.
LaMarcus Washington is an ad executive living in Maryland. He's single, doesn't have any pets, and he's as white as Lena Dunham or anyone else on HBO. But people don't know that. My first name is French. It comes from my great-great-great-grandfather. In French, it means the Marcus. LaMarcus... LaMarcus and his parents, Shaniqua and Darnell, are fed up with... are fed up with feeling like they're the only white family left in the entire U.S. with the last name of Washington. So they put out a series of ads all over the East Coast hoping to track down the remaining white Washingtons for a family reunion. It shouldn't be so hard, Washington told the Baltimore Sun. We're descendants of the original old white guy. But it was hard. They posted flyers at Whole Foods, Lululemon's, and bought ad space in Cat Fancy magazine. Eventually, the Washingtons gave up. If they couldn't have a family reunion, they could at least have a support group for other misfits. There's Jerry Cumberbatch, the only black kid on his polo team. There's Saul Goldberg, a young Mormon missionary who keeps getting propositioned from elderly Jewish ladies with single daughters. And then there's old Bing Google, a 96-year-old grandfather who doesn't understand why he keeps getting cease and desist letters.
A white family named Washington desperately tries to find other white Washingtons and fails. Your last story of an unlikely family reunion comes from Luke Burbank.
Josh and Sarah Schofield of Menominee, Wisconsin, and their two kids were heartbroken when they realized the family's beloved cat, a tabby named Lil Pill, had disappeared during a road trip to Milwaukee, where they were heading to enjoy the Summerfest Festival. We'd stopped at a rest stop off of I-94 to let her out to stretch her legs, and she just took off, said Sarah. She never even looked back. The family searched for hours and left flyers behind, but eventually had to head back home. We didn't even get to see Rush play their concert at Summerfest, said Josh. Anyway, imagine their surprise 4 months later when who should come strolling down the quiet street of their cul-de-sac, none other than Lil Pill herself. We all started crying right then and there, the whole family, said Sarah. It was the stuff local TV news reports and Animal Planet movies are made of. With one problem. Well, we were crying, says Sarah, but Lil didn't seem to care. In fact, she kind of acted like we were getting on her nerves or something. She just walked past us and headed right to our neighbor's house, the Hokinsons. These days, Lil has settled into a new routine in the Hokinson home, lying in the sunbeam and running away from her former family when they approach. It turns out she did want to make an incredible journey, just not back to the house where the family that loved her lived.
A cat that comes back on a journey of many hundreds of miles just to move in with the family next door who she prefers. That was from, of course, Luke Burbank. From Jesse Klein, you heard the story of a guy who drove his car into another house to discover his father's other family. And from Brian Babylon, a white guy named Washington who desperately tries to find other white guys named Washington, which is the real story of family togetherness in this week's news.
It's a tough one, but I'm going to say the guy who drove his car into a house.
All right. You're going to pick Jesse's story of the guy who drove his car into a house and discovered his father with his father's second family.
Yep.
Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with the real story.
I think injuring your father as you're finding out that he also has another wife that you didn't know about is probably one of the more awkward.
That was Jessica Roy. She's the newsfeed editor for Time.com that picked up the story of the sudden discovery in Riyadh from a local Arabic paper. Congratulations, you got it right, Diane.
Oh, thank you so much.
You've earned a point for Jesse just for telling a story well, and you have, in fact, won Carl's voice on your outgoing voicemail.
Oh, great. Thank
Congratulations.
You.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Family reunion. Got to have a family reunion. Family reunion. It's so nice to come together. Let's get together.
And now the game where somebody who does a bunch of things really well tries his hand at something else. If you're a comedy person, you know Bob Odenkirk from Mr. Show, the cult classic sketch series that he did with David Cross. If you're a drama person, or if you're interested in meth, you know him as the shyster lawyer Saul Goodman on Breaking Bad. He's got a new show on the IFC called The Birthday Boys and a new book out as well. Bob Odenkirk, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh my goodness. thank you so much for the warm welcome.
Very excited. We got to ask first about Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. I haven't finished it yet.
You haven't finished it yet. Well, all of us... Okay, first question. All of us who have finished Breaking Bad or were watching it had to be so careful about spoilers for the last season. You've known for, like, what? When did you finish shooting it? 6 months ago? 8 months ago?
Yeah, but I didn't read the final episode and a half. I didn't read anything I wasn't in. How about that?
Okay.
The last,
and did people come up to you during those months that the last final season hadn't even started and were like, so can you, I mean...
Yeah, they came up and said, seriously, what happens? Don't tell me!
you did this show. Let's go back a little bit in time. First of all, you grew up here in Chicago and were part of the sketch comedy scene, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Naperville, Illinois.
Hey, Naperville!
A great little town, although I couldn't wait to get out when I was 15.
Sure.
But that would have been true wherever I was. I went to Chicago, I did sketch comedy, did a short trip in Europe, and I loved sketch comedy since I was a little kid. I did it in junior high, and I did it in high school as part of my school projects. I would write sketches.
Right. Now, what kind of sketches were you doing as a kid? What were some of your early work like?
I wrote, for class, comedy sketches. One was about Ghana.
Oh.
And one was about the Chicago Fire. And then there was one about Abe Lincoln, which has been my go-to comedy touchstone.
Really?
Yes. I did this one-man Abe Lincoln show. It's basically a guy who is filling in for the actual Abe Lincoln one-man show actor. And he doesn't know anything about Lincoln except what he's picked up from hearsay and placemats at restaurants. In it, I stand up and I take a penny out and look at it and go, I've lost weight.
So, so you wrote for Saturday Night Live for a while?
Yeah, I wrote there for 4 years.
And you did a show with your partner David Cross.
Yes.
Called Mr. Show, which was one of the greatest, weirdest things I've ever seen. And, I mean, if you had to describe it to somebody who'd never seen it, well, what would you describe it as?
It's an American Monty Python, but it's a lot angrier than Monty Python ever was. It just is. It's got some edges on it, you know.
Like there was that sketch about the farting performer.
But that was, you know, we were in Montreal that year, the comedy festival, and there was a guy who farted as his act.
That was his actual act?
Yes. Well, there's a famous fartist named Mr. Gas or something.
Mr. Methane.
He's also a French guy. The French love it, and I don't know if it's harder to fart or why it's a prized skill, but...
But you know what? No, I'm not into fart humor. I think I'm beyond that. But I will say, farting on cue...
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
No, farting on cue is a skill set. Let's be real.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, then I guess my son's good at something.
Yeah.
This was with your partnership with David Cross. David Cross has been in the show.
Yeah.
People might know him best these days playing the
Tobias Funke.
Funke on Arrested Development.
Yeah.
And how did you guys meet?
Well, he got hired when I was writing on the Ben Stiller show. He was hired as a writer. I was also in the cast of that show, and he was hired as a writer. But actually, before that, Janine Garofalo was a friend of his and a friend of mine. One day here in L.A., I was sitting in my living room, and the door was open, and the screen door was closed. And Janine lived 3 or 4 blocks away from me, and David was visiting her. And there's nothing to do during the day when you're a comic.
Come on.
Well, there's nothing healthy to do.
There we go.
And she said, why don't you like basketball? My friend Bob Odenkirk likes basketball. Why don't you guys could play? I'll walk you over there. You can meet him. So David didn't want to do this, but he grabbed the basketball, walked over to my house with Janine, stood outside, and they were looking at me through the screen door. And I remember this. And Janine goes, this is my friend David. He likes to play basketball. He wanted to know if you wanted to. And I said... And I looked over and I went, you know what? I'm eating lunch right now. So no. And they went, that was it.
That was it.
And that was, and then he walked away, and it was the most embarrassing thing he'd been through. And
was it just so weird that he was trying to introduce you, like, for a play date with another grown man? Was that the problem?
No, I just think I was a cold bastard.
Oh, well, that could be a problem.
I'm doing my best.
Well, Bob Odenkirk, we are delighted to talk to you.
And Thank you, man.
And we've invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
Better Not Call Saul.
So, as we've been discussing on Breaking Bad, you played less than noble lawyer Saul Goodman. But we're going to ask you about three noble, inspiring, even heroic lawyers. Get two out of three questions right. You'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail, and 8 barrels filled with $10 million each buried somewhere in the desert.
Right.
Carl, who is Bob Odenkirk playing for?
Bob is playing for Kenneth Gilbault of South Hadley, Massachusetts.
And by the way, we should tell you that David Cross, your partner, got 3 out of 3 when he played this game. All right?
Oh, jeez.
All right. That's right. So let's say you're the victim of injustice. And if you go to attorney Willie E. Gary's website, he shows you that he is the guy to help you by playing video of what? A, the horrible injuries suffered by his prior clients. B, his personal fleet of Bentley automobiles. Or C, himself acting out the big speech to the jury from the movie The Verdict.
Wow. I'm going to say his fleet of Bentleys.
You're exactly right.
Wow.
Willie Gary, one of the most successful plaintiff's lawyers in the country, has a fleet of Bentleys, 2 private jets, the second of which is a 737 called Wings of Justice 2 with a gold sink. All right, that's good. Second question. This goes back a few years, but it is one of our favorite lawyers. A lawyer threatened the Cleveland Browns with legal action about the dangerous practice of fans throwing paper airplanes at their stadium. So the team's general counsel, in response, sent back to that lawyer which of these? A, a polite apology delivered by the Cleveland Browns offensive line at 2 in the morning. B, a cease and desist letter folded into a very pointy paper airplane thrown through his window. Or see a helpful note that said, quote, I feel that you should be aware that some a-hole is signing your name to stupid letters.
Oh, my goodness. I like that last one. I'm going to go with the folded cease and desist.
You mean the folded letter into a paper airplane
and
threw it through his window? No, it was actually the last one. It is... It's an enormous... You can Google it, Cleveland Browns letter about paper airplanes. It's from the 70s. It's
nice
an amazing thing. All right. This is interesting. You got 1 out of 2 with 1 to go. If you get this one right, you'll win. The Florida lawyer Thomas Lewis Edwards managed to increase his own advertising exposure. How? A, he stamped innocent thanks to Thomas Lewis Edwards on his clients' foreheads as they left the courtroom. B, in the courtroom, he'd say, objection. This objection brought to you by Thomas Lewis Edwards and CSX, moving 800 tons of freight on 1 gallon of fuel. Or C, he got arrested for drunk driving and his mugshot was published right next to an ad for his law firm in the Gainesville Sun newspaper.
Oh, the last one.
Yes, you're right. The mugshot, of course. Carl, how did Bob Odenkirk do in our quiz?
Well, he had 2 correct answers, Peter, so he's a winner.
Well done, sir. Well done.
I beat David Cross.
Actually, you didn't beat him, but both won.
No, I did, because I won, but I only had to get 2 right to win.
There you go. Bob Odenkirk's new book is Hollywood Said No. His new show, The Birthday Boys, a sketch comedy show, premieres October 18th on the IFC. Bob Odenkirk, thank you so much
for being
with us. Great to talk to you. Thanks for your great work.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Brian Babylon, Jesse Klein, and Luke Burbank. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl tries to find some common ground between the Limocrats and the Rhympublicans in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Luke, some good news for Hallmark and other peddlers of holiday crap. This November 28th, for the first time ever, some Americans will be celebrating what? First time in our lifetimes, anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. This is Thanksgiving and also Passover.
Passover? Oh.
That was... It's a Jewish holiday that I don't remember which one it is.
It's... What's the Jewish holiday that traditionally comes around the time of Christmas?
Complaining?
Wow. Luke.
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah, yes. Very good, Luke.
Hanukkah.
So, yes, on November 28th this year, we will all be celebrating Thanksgivica. Thanksgiving and Hanukkah on the same day. Much like a total eclipse of the sun, or Halley's Comet, or a good Woody Allen movie, this year we're going to witness something very rarely seen, the convergence of Thanksgiving and the start of Hanukkah, Thanksgivica. It hasn't happened since 1888, but like any holiday, Thanksgivica comes with its own traditions. There are cards, candles, t-shirts, and something called a menurkey, which is a turkey-shaped... No! You've got one in your basement. It's a turkey-shaped menorah. Get it out. It's time.
It's custom.
It's custom. But no Thanksgivica dinner is complete without a turdukashevitz. That's a turkey stuffed with a duck, stuffed with a chicken, stuffed with manischewitz and gilt.
So, this helped me out. Help me out, and probably people who are listening who want to do the right thing. So, during... Because, you know, you're supposed to say Happy Holidays.
Right.
You're not supposed to say Merry Christmas because people don't believe that. So, are you... Is it okay just to go with Christmas this year? Because Hanukkah is going to be over with?
Hanukkah is going to be done by the time we get to Christmas.
So we can just go Christmas crazy.
Go full stop Christmas.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
What about Kwanzaa?
Oh, ain't nobody doing that, man.
Luke, the Brooklyn restaurant Eat, which at this point probably already annoys you, is trying a new kind of dinner. They're offering a four-course prefix meal with one rule. Diners must not do what the whole time?
Have their cell phones out?
No. That's old school. This even takes it further. It has to do with communication, though.
It's with communication. They promise not to be too loud.
They
promise to whisper. They promise not to talk.
Exactly right.
They have to eat like people who have been married for a long time.
Exactly. Well, this is what they've got there at this restaurant called Eat. The chef there was inspired by Buddhist monks. They eat in silence. According to reports, customers are taking it very seriously. One even went outside to sneeze.
Brian, I just want you to know not all white people are like this.
I know. You know what?
I mean, some are, and it's not cool.
I'm believing it.
It just feels like a really bossy restaurant. Like, eat. Shh. Pay.
Brian, one of the inventors of the iPad has turned his attention to the home. He has just released what he calls a more polite version of what?
A polite version is something in the bathroom?
Sometimes it's in the bathroom. It's on the ceiling.
A polite...
Usually it's near the kitchen or in the living room. Bedrooms, kids' bedrooms especially.
I will say a smoke detector?
Exactly right.
Yes.
A more polite smoke detector. The new alarm is called the Nest Protect. And it warns users about both smoke and carbon monoxide, but replaces those shrill, annoying beeps with a calm, polite, yet authoritative voice. In other words, it's less Sagal and more Castle.
Hey. Hey, guys. I know you're busy, but it looks like someone tried to dry out their pants in the oven, and now we're all going to die.
That is relaxing.
Yeah. So
that is very relaxing.
I'm just curious... Now, we've all been there, and a lot of people probably have this problem at their home right now, but you blocked it out. What noise does it make when you need to change the battery?
It goes beep.
Yeah, that's right.
And then about 45 seconds later, it goes beep again.
Yeah. And
slowly go insane.
Within about an hour, everybody who has a smoke detector that the battery is going down, you turn into Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining. You're like trying to rip it down from the ceiling, and then it's like wired, and you're taking the battery out, and it's still beeping.
Yeah. Now, this is also, we all know that this is, big problem with smoke detectors, you like burn some toast or whatever, and the smoke detector goes off.
They're sensitive. They're real sensitive.
Right. And so you got to open the windows, and it's terrible. This one, if there's a false alarm, you can walk under it and wave your arm, and it turns off.
That's so safe because nobody waves their arm in a fire.
Exactly right. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Elkhart, Indiana on November 21st. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Carlton Fowler from Houston, Texas.
Hey, Carlton, how are you?
Just fine.
Now, what do you do there in Houston?
I'm a Tripoli parts engineer for NASA at the Johnson Space Center.
That's awesome. We've been to the Johnson Space Center. It's pretty cool. And I'm sorry, you said Tripoli parts engineer?
Electrical, electronic, and electromechanical. So we make sure that computer chips and switches and resistors and capacitors are adequate for the environment, the harsh environment of space.
That's so very
you're
cool.
You're just a rocket scientist, right, bro?
No.
Just
no,
say
we
that.
We have rocket scientists, but that's not me.
Have you seen Gravity?
I have seen Gravity.
Did it feel, like, really real?
It scared the heck out of me.
I bet.
It was fantastic.
Your job is to make sure that doesn't happen, Carlton.
Well, welcome to the show, Carlton. It's good to talk to you. Carl Castle is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you will be a big winner. Ready to go?
I hope so.
Here is your first limerick.
In New Zealand, the people agree, a cat nation we will not be. Get them neutered and spayed, or a fine will be paid. We can own cats, but no more than...
three?
Yes, indeed, three. A district in New Zealand has passed new legislation banning residents from owning more than three cats. This is part of a new initiative to cut down on noise, smell, and New Zealand's rising crazy lady population.
Cat? That should be zero.
You don't like cats?
I think it really sums up the difference between the United States and New Zealand that we are deciding whether the global economy is going to topple, and they're like, three cats tops, right? Yeah. Three cats?
Yeah, that's
three cats.
That's any other problem. Business? No? All right.
Raise the cat ceiling.
That's great.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Yep.
That was hot.
I don't believe that someone can make a cogent argument for more than three cats.
Once you're beyond three cats, it's over. You might as well get to 20.
The gateway drug is one cat. It seems like that's well,
really?
The problem.
Not everybody who gets one cat ends up with 40 cats.
I think so.
Hey, Carlton, here is your next limerick.
In the Tenderloin just past Van Ness, they say vagrancy causes a mess. So with pawn, rook, and queen, we're making a scene. In protest, we'd sit and play
chess.
Right. Public chess used to be a popular pastime in San Francisco, but the police have shut it down, saying the games attract homeless people. And worse, they attract the type of homeless secret geniuses that might get a Robin Williams movie made about them. Chess advocates are angry. They have organized a march to fight this injustice. It'll be led by the Knight, so it's going to be two blocks up, one block over, two blocks up. Here is your last limerick.
I think you're some sort of a witch, 'cause my voice has developed a glitch. I'm no longer a bass, 'cause I'm charmed by your face. Now my voice just keeps rising
in pitch?
Yes, indeed. Scientists at Albright College have discovered that men's voices go up several octaves while talking to pretty women. This is because people instinctively mimic the voice of the person they're talking to, and because it's important to provide women with yet another reason to reject you. The same apparently is true of women. Their voices get lower when talking to men they're interested in, which really raises questions about every interview Terry Gross has ever given.
Guys should always, I've said this before on this program, you should always follow the Barry White school of macking to ladies. Keep it deep. Because any time you get your voice pitchy, that ain't hot.
I think most men's problems talking to women are more content related.
Carl, how did Carlton do in our quiz?
Carlton, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Bye, Carlton. Thanks for playing. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Brian Babylon and Jesse Klein have 3 points each. They lead. Luke Burbank has 2.
All right. Luke, you're in third place. You'll go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. International inspectors visited 3 sites linked to the chemical weapons program in blank this week.
Syria.
Right. Delta Airlines is investigating how a blank managed to get past multiple security agents and take a flight to Las Vegas.
9-year-old kid.
Right. An NYPD undercover officer who participated in the confrontation between an SUV driver and a group of blanks was arrested on assault charges this week.
Motorcyclists.
Right. In the presidential election in Azerbaijan Wednesday, some suspected irregularities because the government blanked.
Shut down.
No, released election results before voting started.
That'll happen.
After a heated feud on Twitter, Jimmy Kimmel and blank reconciled on Kimmel's show on Wednesday.
Yeezy.
Yes, also known as?
Kanye West.
Right. In an interview with the Associated Press, President Obama said that he thought the name of the blank football team might have to be changed.
Washington Redskins.
Right. The New York Giants was having such a lousy season that a local gentleman's club is now blanking.
Offering free lap dances if they win a game.
No, they were refusing to air the games because all the booing was distracting the strippers. If you want to go to Rick's Cabaret, that's fine, but don't expect to watch the Giants game while you're there. According to the club spokesperson, the crowd started booing the TVs. The girls had to work extra hard. And hearing that, the Giants management said, "Work hard? Really?" and hired the girls to be the new Giants offensive line. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Luke has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. Brian is up next. We flipped a coin. He took this choice. So here you go, Brian. Fill in the blank. In spite of the shutdown, this week the 9 justices of the blank began the new term.
Supreme Court.
Right, because of outrage over their delay. On Thursday, Congress voted to restore blank benefits to military families.
Death benefits?
Right. The USDA threatened to shut down 3 factories linked to a blank outbreak in chicken this week.
Salmonella.
Right. A man being pulled over for a traffic violation led police on a short chase so he could blank.
He could tweet.
Finish his Big Mac. Trading for the Tweeter Home Entertainment Group was suspended, and the ticker symbol was changed after too many people mistook it for blank.
A swear?
No, Twitter. It's not Twitter, it's Tweeter.
Tweeter.
Saying they'll be harder to counterfeit, on Tuesday the U.S. Treasury released the new redesigned blank.
$100 bill?
Right, to hide the fact that he had forgotten to book the wedding chapel. An unhappy groom in Britain blanked.
Faked his own death.
No, he called in a bomb threat.
That's what you do, Pete.
Knowing he was about to get in trouble with his future missus because he'd forgotten to book the room, the groom waited until a few hours before the scheduled wedding and then called the chapel with a bomb threat. He then thought it was a bad idea, tried to call back, but they had evacuated it because somebody had called in a bomb threat.
But you know what, man? What? Their love is strong, so they'll get through it.
Carl, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points, but Luke Burbank still has the lead with 12.
All right. Well, how many, then, does Jesse Klein need to win?
5 correct answers.
All right, Jesse, this is for the game. Here we go. Though it didn't sever ties, this week the U.S. cut back military and economic aid to blank.
Egypt?
Yes, after raiding hideouts in Libya and Somalia. A team of U.S. blanks captured an al-Qaeda leader.
Navy SEALs.
You bet. On Thursday, Kwame Kilpatrick, the former mayor of blank, was sentenced to 28 years in prison for public corruption.
Detroit?
Yes, indeed. The Nobel Prize for Physics was awarded this week to 2 British scientists responsible for discovering the blank particle.
The God particle.
Yeah, known as the Higgs boson. The Vatican is recalling more than 6,000 gold medals commemorating Pope Francis's papacy because they misspelled blank.
Francis?
No, Jesus.
Oh.
They spelled it. They spelled it Leesus. This
That's
week,
cool.
Kardashian mom Kris announced that she was separating from her husband, Olympic champion blank.
Bruce Jenner.
Right, after posting minor criticisms on Twitter, Neil deGrasse Tyson posted a message online complimenting the space movie blank.
Gravity.
Right, a Wisconsin scientist discovered a new species of tick in blank.
In deer?
No, in his nose.
Oh, okay.
3 days after returning from a trip to Africa, Dr. Tony Goldberg found a tick up his nose. And after removing it with forceps, that's how scientists pick their nose, he discovered it was a new species, heretofore unknown. Said Goldberg, when you first realize you have a tick up your nose, it takes a lot of willpower not to claw your face off.
Well, that's a gross way to end.
Carl, did Jesse do well enough to win?
Jesse had 6 correct answers for 12 more points, giving her 15 points, and that's enough to make her
win.
That's the first time I've ever won!
This is the first time? Congratulations.
She's so excited.
How am I going to spend all the money I get? Wait, what?
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what new category the Nobel Prize Committee will unveil next year for a new prize. But first, let me tell you all that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur Language Programs, offering Paul Pimsleur's book, How to Learn a Foreign Language, available at Pimsleur.com. Kobo, creator of the Kobo Aura HD e-reader, available now at independent bookstores, store locator at indiebound.org. Esurance, insurance for the modern world, offering a mobile app that lets users report and monitor car insurance claims at esurance.com. And Angie's List, providing reviews of local roofers, painters, landscapers, and plumbers to keep the consumer informed. More at angieslist.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Goedeke writes our limerick. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Our CSMO is Miles Dernboss. Our intern is Stephen Dorothy and Toto Bias. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Larchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walcharver and Emily Acton. Technical directions from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillag. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the new Nobel Prize awarded for? Brian Babylon.
It's going to be a super-duper peace prize given to each American for putting up with Congress's crap.
Jesse Klein.
There will be a Nobel Prize for twerking.
And Luke Burbank.
The Nobel Prize for open letter to Miley Cyrus.
And if they start awarding any of those Nobel Prizes, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Luke Burbank, Jesse Klein, and Brian Babylon. Thanks all of you for listening. Great to have you here. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.